Velkommen igjen til Paradigmepodden, hvor vi møter spennende mennesker som opptatt av nye paradigmer på mange ulike områder. Mitt navn Terje Toftnes. I denne episoden skal vi tilbake til et tema som jeg har snakket om tidligere i denne podcasten, nemlig den nye forskningen og det nye synet på kreftsykdom. I episode 25 fortalte jeg om min egen kreftopplevelse og hvordan jeg med god hjelp av komplementærmedisin ble frisk fra en såkalt uhelbredelig lymfekreft med dårlig prognose. Det tok 6 måneder. Riktig nok også med hjelp av noe strålebehandling helt på slutten på de aller største kreftsvulstene, men det var kombinasjonen av skolemedisin og komplementærmedisin som gjorde at jeg ble helt kreftfri og har vært det siden. Heldigvis slapp jeg unna bivirkninger fra vanlig kreftmedisin, slik mange opplever med tradisjonell kreftbehandling. Ifølge statistikken for min type kreft, som altså var en uhelbredelig type lymfekreft, så skulle jeg egentlig ha ligget under jorda for 5 år siden. Men jeg kan forsikre om at det ikke er et spøkelse som sitter og snakker her. Vel, min kreftopplevelse resulterte da i en dokumentarfilm, Fri fra kreft, fra 2019, og senere boken med samme navn i 2021, hvor jeg forteller hele historien om hva som gjorde meg syk og hva som gjorde meg frisk, og hvilke nye teorier som nå i ferd med å endre hele synet på årsaksforholdet til kreft, som noe annet enn bare uflaks og genetisk predisposisjon. Disse nye teoriene, som nå praktiseres ved flere klinikker i Europa, gjør at denne sykdommen kan behandles på en mer effektiv og skånsom måte. Men da må man tenke helhetlig og ikke bare behandle symptomet som kreften egentlig er, men selve årsaken. Og dette gjelder selvfølgelig også for de fleste typer kroniske sykdommer. Vel, en av de som lengst fremme i hele Europa og i verden, for den saks skyld, på denne nye forståelsen av kreft, den sveitsiske legen Thomas Rau. Han har over en periode på mer enn 30 år utviklet det han kaller «The Swiss Biological Medicine Concept», noe som han også presenterer i boken av samme navn. Dette den nye måten å se kronisk sykdom på som et resultat av miljøet i hele kroppen. Dr. Rau driver i dag en klinikk utenfor Zürich i Schweiz, hvor jeg også var og besøkte ham i forbindelse med mitt filmprosjekt i 2019. Han var også her i Norge i januar 2023 og holdt et fantastisk foredrag på Nordisk ernæringskonferanse. I dag samarbeider han også med flere andre forskere på denne nye tilnærmingen til kreft og kronisk sykdom, blant annet Dr. Thomas Seyfried i Boston, som lenge har kalt kreft en metabolsk sykdom. I denne episoden skal vi høre hva Dr. Rau mener årsakene til mange av dagens kroniske sykdommer, som dessverre rammer flere og flere, spesielt i den vestlige verden, og kreft i særdeleshet. Vi starter med å spørre hvorfor han etablerte denne typen klinikk i utgangspunktet.
Why did we build up the Swiss biological medicine concept? After 27 years of building up a clinic and being practicing on patients, more and more all the difficult cases, all the progressed cases, I had such a knowledge, and I'm no more the youngest, as everybody can see. So I had to think about how can we bring this huge knowledge to heal difficult, non-healable and unclear patients, and also cancer patients, to the world. So there are 2 things I have to bring it to the world, speaking out openly, and there is probably the more important part is to teach doctors who are open-minded enough. And well, and so I had the plan to build up a clinic where doctors can learn, and an academy where they can learn theoretically. This is how it came together. The difference between the so-called orthodox medicine or mainstream medicine and our new kind of approach is that we look for the causes. and we treat the underlying causes for the diseases. And the very important thing is that all these unknown and unclear diseases, no causes are known or are known, that they just have many causes. They are multi-causal. And after 30 years of doing this, more and more I realized not only the world changed dramatically what makes people sick, and and I realized it's more or less some of the main causes which come across again and again and again. And so I began to go into these most important causes, finding all the techniques to evaluate, even down to the genes of the patient, to see, can the patient detoxify this or that? Well, it's about toxicity and also treatment modalities, which are fully new and they really go to the cell. I can say nowadays we rebuild your body cell by cell, because the body is that's a very important part. The body is a dynamic, permanently rebuilding system. You have your organ is sick now. For example, hepatitis begins to get cirrhosis of the liver. Well, this liver rebuilds within several months or within a year. And if you can change the environment, if you can change the food, if you can change everything which influences the cells, they will behave differently, and the new ones, they will be better, and the grandchildren of these cells, they will be even better, and slowly it's the process which comes to healing. The patient heals from inside, and this is the main thing, and the patient has to heal him or herself and can do a lot to being healed, him or herself. It's not being passive, now I'm sick, I put everything in the hands of the so-called specialists and then I will get better. This is exactly the wrong approach. And this is what I developed during the last, I would say, 20 years.
Well, in your opinion, how much does toxic loads influence the modern human body?
Well, before I answer, it's not only the toxic situation. We have three things which our patients and also the average population is suffering now. Toxic load, a decreased function of the intestines, not the digestion and stool, no, the detoxification and the upbuilding of stuff and the immune system, which is all in the gut. So second point is gut system and immune system. And the third is we don't have the minerals and trace elements anymore to rebuild and upbuild the cells. These are the three pillars of Dr. Rao's Swiss biological medicine: detoxification, upbuilding of the intestines, and upbuilding of the cells, feeding the cells. So let us go to pillar number one, toxic load. The toxic average load increased by more than factor 30 since 1950, more than factor 20 since 1983. There are a lot of scientific backgrounds in. So if people say my medicine is not scientific, so they just should go to read a little bit more. We are more scientific than orthodox medicine. Only side sentence. But that what kind of toxic load? Former times there were heavy metals, steel workhorse or whaling workhorse or whatever kind of coal workers. They were sincerely diseased by toxic load, but they were few, didn't count. Nowadays it's different because toxic load is in the environment, comes in the dust, is omnipresent, goes to the earth, goes into the groundwater, gets taken out and gets drank. In addition, we intoxify our systems, ourselves, by doing preservatives, by doing sprays, by giving glyphenols, glyphosates, and many, many organic toxins and unorganic toxins. About 20 years ago, when I began with the leader of the Swiss toxicological lab, I began to make heavy metal tests from urine. We had many patients with heavy metals like mercury or silver. Nowadays it's different. We still have them, but we have now aluminium, we have arsenic, we have cadmium. I just was in Chongqing just now. You could hardly see from this house to the other house. There is such a smog. Even though the weather was fantastic, the plane, the beautiful weather coming down, the town was in a bulb of toxic load, of smog. They measured this, and it was cadmium containing. Cadmium makes lung cancer, makes colitis, makes colon cancer, makes bladder cancer. And the patients, they just ingest them. So it increased absolutely dramatically. Toxic load. And all of us, we are confronted. We take the the farmer's boy from the hill, living healthy, at least much healthier than the average. And we would make a toxic load test for him. Even he would show aluminium. Even he would show arsenic. It is omnipresent because it comes from the dust from the air down. Did it find in Finland, in the lakes? There is no aluminium work, no aluminium factory far around. They had the highest aluminium content in these Finlandian lakes. So from where? Because the earth is turning and the stratosphere stays and it goes up and goes down. Even aluminium, which is a light metal, goes slowly down and falls down to the forests and to the lakes. And the people drink it. Aluminium is absolutely clear and known toxicology-wise that it makes irritability of the nerve system, irritability of the brain. Who wonders that we have a horribly increasing incidence of autism, of ADD, of ADHD, and all these children's diseases, neurological and cognitive diseases. Not only Alzheimer's, we know they are related to toxins and to aluminium, but also children. We run into a huge social problem, a huge economical problem. There are possibilities to measure toxins in all our fluids. It's easy. It's not even so expensive. We can do this in toxicological lab. We have our state lab in Switzerland who tests these toxins. And we find with this lab, it's not me, it's the university acknowledged lab. So, and we find there all this very high toxic load. We can, on all the patients who come to me, 17 different toxic heavy metals and light metals, toxic metals we test. And about 15 organic toxins. I asked a professor who is a friend of mine, what results do you have with the neurological clinics or with the cancer clinics? Oh, you know, Thomas, you are the only one in Switzerland who tests these tests. So who is scientific here or not? I don't accept the argument of not being scientific anymore. This is only a protecting argument of the ignorance.
Okay. Well, this is actually not very good news, and still not so commonly known, at least not to the degree that you are presenting here. But let's move on to the second pillar.
The second pillar is the intestinal system and immune system. Did you know that 80% of people in our age, adults, 80% of the immune system, the T cells, the lymph cells, are along the small intestinal system in the Peyer's patches. So our small intestinal system is our immune system. It is 0.1 to perhaps 2 millimeters from the inside of the gut. Who can believe that what you eat does not interfere with what your immune system reacts to? This is absolutely unbelievable, this ignorance of the orthodox world, not to accept the importance of the nutrition. Back to the gut. We have now more and more very fast increasing, even also increasing in the consciousness of the people, the problem of the non-dense system of the intestines, so-called leaky gut. Why does the leakiness of the gut come? Because we destroy the inner mucous membrane and the glycocalyx, which is like a film on this membrane, which has exactly the right holes, so that what we should take up, amino acids or oligopeptides, they go through bigger molecules, like for example glyphosates, as an example and a bizarre example. They have bigger molecules and they don't go through. But if these holes are bigger, they go in and they produce their neurotoxicity in the body or their cancerogenicity in the body. When I see my cancer patients, I'm very experienced in cancer treatment. Since more than 25 years, I do daily cancer treatment. So when I see my patients, day one, we test them for intestinal leakiness and for intestinal integrity and for intestinal bacteria. They are always a wreck. You can count, you can bet on cancer patients are intestinal wrecks. So you have to rebuild their inner system of the biggest organ, the intestines. The intestinal, small intestinal surface is by far the biggest organ of your body, of our body. So it takes up all the trace elements. It It processes the proteins and the food. It filters the toxic things. And it's the site where bacteria grow and protect. And the bacteria themselves, they are the symbiotic stimuli for the Peyer's patches. Now, when I look at my cancer patients, they have perhaps 100th or 1,000th, or if they are very healthy, 1/10th of the what they should have of intestinal bacteria. So their filtering system is not intact and everything goes in. Then we eat or we drink things which are even toxic themselves, like cow dairy product of today, which is a highly allergenic, contains Clostridia toxins, which are highly neurotoxic. Normally, of course, unproblematic toxins, these Clostridia toxins, but we have leakiness of the intestines. These toxins go through and make cognitive decline or make neurological diseases or make Lyme diseases or make even cancer. That's only one example. That's why if we want to get the patient healthier, whatever the patient has, we have to rebuild the intestinal system. It can be autoimmune patient, it can be cancer patient, it can be a neurological patient. Every patient gets a intestinal treatment. This is pillar number two. And I can analyze very systematically if they have a lack of this or that or this bacteria, if they have a leakiness of the intestines. It's all measurable. Why do the gastroenterologists not measure? I do not understand this. And we can also treat individually. The problem might be that there is not just a guideline possible, because we don't treat the box, we treat an individual. And this is the big difference. We diagnose extremely individualized with all the techniques, and we treat extremely individualized the gut, but the whole person too. That's one of the biggest differences, that we treat individuals, not diagnosis and not lab values.
In your book, you have a picture of a barrel, like an oil barrel, which contains all the toxins that over the years built up in the body. Can you explain why you use this metaphor?
When I talk about all this toxic load and intestines and so on, my metaphor with the oil barrel comes to my mind. There is this barrel which fills, and then it overflows. In the human being, we fill up with toxins and loads and foci and whatever it might be, and at the end, it overflows. But it can take very long. Oh, doctor, my brother has more amalgam fillings than me, and he's healthier as healthy. So how can it be that I have 3 amalgams and I suffer from this? Well, his barrel probably is different than yours. Or perhaps, dear patient, you have a genetic change that you cannot even detoxify yourself. We can measure. So it takes a time until you fill up. When we look at the diseases nowadays, we see that the toxic load gets faster and faster and faster. This is why diseases occur earlier and earlier. For example, ovarian cancer, typical example. 40 years ago, this was the cancer of 60 to 90 years old ladies, and not so frequent. Now it's the cancer of 40 to 70 years old ladies. I have even 35 years old ladies with ovarian cancer. Impossible. No, it is possible, because their toxic career is much quicker. This is why they get these diseases much earlier. Instead of just pulling a little cup when the barrel overflows, that's what orthodox medicine does. We try to empty the barrel by drilling a hole at the bottom, so that it really detoxifies, and the regulatory capacity of the regulation capacity of the body gets healed again. Again, another reason why nutrition is so extremely important: to empty the barrel.
Yes, of course. Nutrition is a key factor. So then, tell us about the third pillar.
The third pillar of Dr. Rao's three pillars of biological medicine is the rebuilding. I never learned, even though I have a very good medical education, I never learned about the rebuilding of the organs. This was just given. But what does it need? Well, the universe probably just gave us that it rebuilds. But this is not true. The cells, they need food to rebuild. And if they starve, they have less rebuilding capacity. If they get nutrified, then they rebuild better and they are healthier. Now, this is one aspect. The other aspect is that since 1950, the European average nutrition changed absolutely fundamentally. We eat nowadays, per day in average, in Norway, in Germany, in US even, and in Switzerland, we eat around 130 gram protein, pure protein, per day. We can't process this. We just store these proteins somewhere. But are they good proteins which we store there? The ones who came through the intestines, who are leaky, just gluey proteins from wrongly nutrified cows and beef and whatever? No, of course not. So we have not only bad protein intake, but also too much. This glues into our tissue and makes the oxygenation of the tissue decreased, because oxygen goes in the tissue through the interstitial space. Well, we have an earlier aging due to so much overproteinization. If you want to rejuvenate, you have to eat less protein. You have to be vegetarian. Not only this, overproteinization, but even worse probably is the lack of trace elements. The trace elements, these 100 and whatever 16 elements of the periodic system of the elements, how many do we really get per day? Did you ever think about How are plants grown? They are grown on speed and on quantity. Do these poor plants, let's say the corn or the wheat or the grains, do they really have the time to put, to take all the trace elements out of the earth where they get it from? Of course not. You have to fertilize. Well, do the fertilizer contain all the rare trace elements? For example, chromium, which you need to protect from insulin resistance, from diabetes, only as an example. Or silicium, which you would need for all your brain structure? Of course not, because they don't solve so fast. This is why we should have plants eating plants which were grown on good soil. But good soil needs time to rebuild. Well, the numbers, these are not my numbers, these are official health department numbers. They show 100% trace element intake, defined, 1950. Now we are on 22%. So we have 1/4 of the life necessary trace element intake which our grandfathers had 1950. Who wonders that we have this balance? Now too much protein, too little trace elements. This makes lazy cells. This is one of the most important reasons for all the civilatory diseases like diabetes, like overweight. Overweight is not a question of calorie intake. Overweight is a system of the cells do not work anymore. So what we do is we test again. We can test our patients how the content of their body is, and we can feed them individually for more trace elements. Well, I understand this sounds so complicated with all these tests and all this individualization. It is not difficult. 80% of what I say you can do at home, you can do yourself, and it's based on nutrition. Nutrition, good or not good, is causing diseases or is healing you. This is so important, and we can tell you how to do it.
But what about the pH value in the body? There has been some focus on this recently, saying that this also is an important factor. Do you agree to that?
The hyperacidity, which is an expression which is absolutely not acknowledged in Orthodox medicine. But there is a hyperacidity. Where does hyperacidity come from? This is a big, big problem. And it's superissimo easy to measure. You make a lacmus paper, you measure your urine, and you can see the pH. Normally pH should be around 7.2, perhaps 6.8, around alkaline. In the morning it can be a little bit on the acid side, on the alkaline side. At the evening it should be on the alkaline side. Ideally. But our patients, I began to measure every patient. I gave them lacmus paper, costs 5 francs for 100 pieces. So, and they had to book keeping on their urine pH 3 times per day. And they came, they always had pH of 5, 5, 5, perhaps 6 if they were a world champion. My rheumatoid patients. We changed intensively the diet. In the beginning, I gave alkaline powders and to make it quicker. So they got alkaline values, you know, sodium bicarbonate or potassium citrate or all these alkaline powders, baking soda. There are hundreds when you look on the market. They are very good. And they take this and they feel after 2, 3 days, they begin to feel different. But they have to change the diet too. Where does it come from? It comes from the hyperacidity, which in fact is a hyperaminoacidity. Amino acids from proteins. So hyperproteinization, which is the same thing as aminoacidification, releases H plus ion, all chemically explainable, goes into the tissue. It does not go into the blood. It penetrates to the tissue instantaneously. The H plus ions, they get bound by hemoglobin, so the blood keeps alkaline. It's well buffered, very well buffered. But the H plus goes into the tissue and makes the connective and interstitial tissue acid. And then the little nerve endings, they irritate of this acidity. And this is the hyperacidity pain. This is hyperacidity. The second reason is back to the protein. We eat 3 times more protein than we did 50 years ago. This makes us 3 times more acid. And we work less, we process less, we sweat less because we are clerks, no more workers. Second is that we eat, now please hold yourself at the desk, we eat 10 times more sugar than 1950. 10 times more sugar intake than 1950. Sugar gets fermented and makes lactic acid as fermentation product. This is why the sweet sugar acidifies you. This is why I tell my patients, no white sugar in your house. No white sugar in any drink, in any food. This is one of the most important things to deacidify and reduce your protein consumption. When I hear nowadays the patients who make fasting course, ketogenic fasting course with high protein intake, maybe they get a little bit better for several weeks, but the feedback is horrible. This is the worst thing which they can do. It's even making their acidity and their degenerative tendency more. This is hyperacidity. It's easy to treat with diet, with alkaline products, and never Nexium or any H blockers or proton pump inhibitors. Never, because when you take them, the acidity no more goes to the stomach and no more gets bound in the stool and gets out of the body. It stays in the body. We talked about the low carbo or keto diet. I am very much against this diet because our intestinal flora, which really detoxifies our body, the Bacteroides bacteria, and the Bifidus and Lactophilus, all these bacteria, and mainly the Bacteroides, which are the most numerous bacteria in our body, they live from long-chain carbohydrates. So they need, for their existence, they need good fats, good oils, plant oils. They need phosphatidylcholines. and they need long-chain carbohydrates, which are in vegetables. Not fully raw vegetables. Most patients, they cannot really digest well the very raw vegetables. Some can. That's why we suggest to continue with vegetables slightly cooked. Because not for you as patient, no, for your bacteria. And if these bacteria are healthy and happy, they metabolize the toxins and they filter your body. So this is the carbo part. What I'm against, of course, is short-chain carbohydrate, high glycemic index, no sugar. Sugar is the death of the bacteria. They need the long-chain carbohydrates, not the short-chain. The short-chains, they swoop, they go in, and they make metabolic processes like hyperacidity. So we are against sugar, but for vegetables, which contain, of course, carbohydrates. Then the protein, I explained already, with the high protein diet, you acidify the body. With a hyperprotein diet, you acidify the body and you produce long-term coronary heart disease. You use hypertension. You produce kidney problems. You produce degenerative tendencies and all the degenerative diseases like cognitive decline and so on. This is really not good. Eat vegetarian, best would be slightly cooked or a mix between cooked and not cooked vegan food. This is what would be the best. And if you want to have some meat, you take once per week fish, and you take perhaps once or twice per week biological or organic chicken, only healthy, happy chicken. And not even think of dairy protein.
So based on what you have said, what creates cancer?
This question I'm asked quite often. I have to ask, why gets cancer so much more frequent? Why do all the cancer treatments, in spite of all the billions, trillions of wasted money for chemotherapies, why does it get even more frequent? It didn't help at all the last 20 years of last 30 years of cancer treatments. So, because they don't attack the reasons. There is no reason for cancer. There is super individualized reasons, always plural, many reasons. When I look at my patients, we do this large evaluation. When the patients come, I do cancer treatment since more than 25 years. We see viruses. For example, prostate carcinoma has a clear relation to bacteria and to Epstein-Barr virus. Lymphoma, non-Hodgkin lymphoma of all types, they are densely related to Epstein-Barr virus, but also to cytomegalia virus. These are possible viruses. Brain tumors are related to shingle viruses. These are things which are known. Even orthodox medicine knows this, but they don't do anything around. So this is number one. Number two is toxic load. I could make a big list. Cadmium makes colon cancer, makes lung cancer, is the reason why in Beijing so many patients, it increases, explodes the lung cancer incidence, because they have this huge, incredible load of cadmium in the smog from the coal works. So this is toxic load. Then we have organic toxins, glyphosates, bisphenols, pyrethroids, DDTs, and. All measurable. We do this in our patients, and when they have high levels, we drain these organic toxins individually with alpha-lipoic acid or other fatty acids, which we infuse or take orally, or we do colonics which bind these toxins, and the patient gets better. Lymphoma, I just had a lymphoma case, they disappear out of the blue. Well, it's not out of the blue. The patient changed the nutrition and detoxified. And the third factor is a genetic. I think there is a genetic reason for cancer too, but it's only a part reason. You can have the gene and you don't get cancer. It's a cofactor. And the third is nutrition. Nutrition, wrong nutrition makes cancer. This is why it's, in my opinion, fully, fully wrong to say to patients who have cancer, you do not need to change your nutrition. This is the wrongest thing which orthodox medicine does.
What do you believe the future of biological medicine will look like?
What is the future? This is a very difficult question. I can't really answer for sure, because there is a counteraction to our biological medicine. And the counteraction is a intensive influence from interested people, interested circles and companies who do not want this to be known. Because the human being, the individual, should not be anymore responsible for him or herself. But this is a very, very deep going movement in the whole world, that that individuality should be reduced and the box should become more dense and more tight, so that we all are just inside the boxes people. And this needs a brainwash, needs a permanent information, wrong or not wrong, so that everybody believes the same. My big astonishment is that the people, most of the people, I just was in China just last week, having talks there, people still believe that Orthodox specialists are the best and they have the best knowledge and they do the best for the people, which unfortunately is no more true. It's a development which is politically, medically, nutritionally, on all levels that the human being gets pushed into a very narrow thinking system. And this thinking system tells him, you get led by the people who lead you, by the authorities. And this is how it has to be. It's very, very sad. I hope that such films, many people should do speeches. We should go out and wake up the population. If this can be done, then it can change. If change has come, the change has come from the ground. Because from up, I see this, I have the opportunity to be in all over the world, really all over the world. I have a lot of speeches in the US. The doctors there, they are like this. No, I can't do this, otherwise I've taken away the license. No, I'm not allowed to talk about nutrition because I'm a doctor, not a nutritionist. You know, the box gets tighter and tighter. And from up, it gets more and more difficult. So we are here in a state which has at least a certain tolerance. I'm quite free. That's why I practice in Switzerland. Well, one factor, of course. Because here I can still talk what I want as doctor. And I'm not restricted. But in most countries, this is unfortunately no more the case.
Thank you so much. Jeg synes det Dr. Rao sier, og hva han står for, så utrolig viktig. Selv så fulgte jeg altså en protokoll i tråd med hans teorier, godt hjulpet av norske biopater som har studert biologisk medisin hos Dr. Rao, og det var det som gjorde meg helt kreftfri. Vel å merke så behandlet de ikke kreften direkte, noe de heller ikke har lov til i Norge. De behandlet min allmenn tilstand, med avgiftning og oppbygging av immunsystem og cellemiljø og tilstanden i tarmen min. Det gjorde susen. Jeg må igjen minne om at Radiumhospitalet sa kategorisk at jeg aldri ville bli kvitt kreften, de kunne bare dempe den slik at jeg kunne bedre leve med den så lenge det varte. Og prognosen ifølge statistikken var altså 32 måneders overlevelse. Ifølge onkologene der var årsaken til de fleste krefttilfeller ren uflaks. Det var da jeg forsto at de ikke visste hva årsaken var, og heller ikke at de var på det sporet i det hele tatt. Det eneste de var opptatt av var å fjerne eller å drepe kreftceller, altså å fjerne symptomet uten hensyn til årsaken. Og derfor oppsøkte jeg andre alternativer. Jeg må jo innrømme at jeg nesten daglig får henvendelser fra mennesker som er berørt av kreft på en eller annen måte, med spørsmål om hvem som hjalp meg, og så videre. Og det er lov å behandle allmenntilstanden til syke mennesker i Norge, selv om man ikke er en del av det regulerte helsevesenet. Det som ikke er lov er selvfølgelig å reklamere for at man kan kurere spesielle enkelte sykdommer. Men hvis det er noen som har lyst til å komme i kontakt med biopater, altså dette er jo mennesker med lang utdannelse, mange av de utdannet ved Tønsberg medisinske skole, og de fleste har jo også annen medisinsk utdannelse i bunn når de tar fatt på biopatstudiet. Det finnes ikke så mange av dem i Norge, men en del av de som jobber med dette er etter min oppfatning veldig flinke, så jeg har sagt at jeg er villig til å formidle kontakt hvis det er noen som er interessert. Uten at jeg selvfølgelig kan love noe som helst. Jeg vil til slutt bare igjen minne om vårt VIPS-nummer, som 524005, 524005, for de som vil støtte denne podcasten videre, og tusen takk igjen til alle dere som har gjort det. Og så ønsker jeg bare velkommen igjen til neste episode av Paradigmepodden.